As far as we know, God didn't number them. And God didn't even call them commandments. And yet the Ten Commandments have become so much a part of not only the lives of faith communities, but even our broader social environment. If people know nothing else from Scripture, they are at least, I think, aware that there is something called the Ten Commandments. But God didn't number them. And God didn't call them commandments. Scholars think that these were originally presented to God's people as words, as just a gift of words. God gave the people these words. And in their earliest form, scholars are quite sure that they were just words, one or two words. No murder, no idols. Love parents. Simple words. All of the extra words that we now hear have been added later by people who thought they needed improvement. Just words. Words given as a gift to God's people. You may or may not know that different faith groups split and number them differently. Jews, Catholics, Lutherans, other Protestants, the lists are not the same. And they appear twice in the Scriptures, both, as we heard this morning from Exodus, but also later in the fifth chapter of Deuteronomy. And those two lists are not exactly the same. And especially if you try and compare the Exodus and the Deuteronomy, it's tricky to get 10. It's easier to get 14 or 15. And yet across the ages, different groups have merged or split to get 10. Not so much because that was God's sacred intent, but because 10 is really easy to remember. And if you're trying to keep track of these special words, having 10 to match the 10 fingers on our hands is helpful. So these words that vary in the way they are presented, that vary in the number that are actually there, which have been added to and shifted across the centuries, we should be really wary about casting these words in stone. And yet, they are important. They have been important to people of faith for more years than we can count. They are words, words, not so much commandments. God does not call them commandments. And furthermore, if you read the list of these words in the Scriptures, you will notice that there are no consequences for disobedience. Surely, if they are meant to be binding commandments, there would be penalties for disobedience. And yet they are not there. The importance of these words for us, for people of faith, does not depend upon their being enforceable, does not depend upon there being dire judicial consequences if they are ignored or denied. Their appeal for us and for people of faith across a broad spectrum of faith communities, their appeal over the centuries is to a deeper grounding, a deeper motivation. They are words of guidance given to us by our God, by the God who created and us in some way redemption and freedom. They are not enforceable. So why, we might ask, if we really were to step back from all of the baggage that these words have accumulated over the centuries, why might we be motivated to take them seriously, to follow them as best we can, to take them into our hearts? There are no consequences for disobedience. They are not enforceable. Why might we keep these words in our hearts to guide our lives? There are a number of ways to answer that question. One might be out of a sense of gratitude. And it's my understanding, I may be oversimplifying, but it's my understanding that particularly within the Jewish tradition, this has been an important motivation. If you read the placement of these words in the scriptures, they are preceded by the thankful affirmation that God brought us out of Egypt. God gave us freedom. God gave us new life, and then offered us these words as a way to live into that new life. So out of gratitude for what God has given us, we will take to heart his words of guidance. Some people might seek to follow them or to be guided by these words purely out of a sense of duty or reverence to God's having given them. And that should be motivation. They are a gift from God, from our God, and therefore something to be taken seriously. If we're really stepping out of the sort of faith tradition of these words, we might say that as individuals, and even as a broader society, we need some sort of ethical norms to live our common lives. And sociologically, these are pretty good norms. Let's hang on to them. They have served societies well for a long time. Let's hang on to them. But we still might ask, why in our hearts might we want to keep these laws, to follow these commandments, to be guided by these words? Why might we choose or desire to do that? You may know that when Jesus is asked to summarize the law, and this is the law that is the context for that passage in the Gospels. When Jesus is asked to summarize the law of Moses, to summarize these words of God, Jesus talks about love. Jesus summarizes these words within the context of love. They are about love. They are about loving God and loving neighbor. And if we desire to be loving people, we might try to look at these words within that context in our own lives. If we want to be people who act with love, these words might provide some useful guidance to us. After all, Jesus places them within the context of love. And I've said before that in the Bible, both in the Hebrew Scriptures and in the New Testament, love is not a feeling. It is a way of acting. It is to a large degree a choice that we make, how to act. As I've talked about it before, it is a way of acting for the good of others, so that our actions bring good to others. And yet there's another way to think about it as well. Sometimes love is a way of not acting. Sometimes love is expressed as our choice not to act in certain ways. There's a wonderful quote that comes from the South African writer, and I'm not 100% sure how to pronounce his name, Alan Paton? 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 I always thought it was Paton, but then, anyway, Paton. Shall I say Paton? heard at least of his most famous book, Cry the Beloved Country. He wrote passionately in his own way against apartheid in his native South Africa. He was white. He wrote passionately against apartheid. This doesn't come from Cry the Beloved Country, it comes from another work of his. And he says, and think of the context from which he writes, he says, "Law is not primarily giving expression to tender feelings." There's nothing wrong with that. But thinking within the context of a society or a faith tradition or trying to live ethically, love is not primarily giving expression to tender feelings. It is primarily, Patton writes, consenting to an orderliness of life. To love means to bring one's whole life under discipline, refraining from any unloving or mean or cruel. Love means to bring our lives under discipline, to choose both to act and not to act in certain ways. Patton's quote is particularly appropriate because if you look at these ten words of guidance, at least ten are reckoning of them, are negative. They're given in the negative of things we are not to do. Thou shalt not. And instead of thinking of those as prohibitions, think about not doing those actions as a choice to love, as a choice to make space where love can be given reality and shape. To not act in a way that is mean or cruel or dismissive is to give space for love and respect to grow. Even love of God. You shall not make for yourself any idols or graven images. One of the forms that Lenten discipline often takes is to try and put aside those many things that we in our own lives cast as idols, those many things that we love beyond the love of God, those many things that get in the way of our love of God, to put aside those idols, those graven images, to not act in ways that further our idolatry, is to open up space, to clear away the false idols, is to open up space for God to be present in our lives and for love of God to grow. Jesus summarizes the law as love of God and love of neighbor. This will sound glib, but it really isn't. Choosing to not kill your neighbor is an act of love. Think about the context of apartheid South Africa. Think about the ongoing context in our world today. Choosing to not kill your neighbor is an act of love. A place where love and respect can grow. And just think about how much richer our common life together as human beings, if we could all do a better job of not coveting. Not coveting someone else's anything and everything. If we could put that aside, put those actions aside, perhaps we could focus on the other, not what the other person has, but who the other person is, and make space for human relationships to grow among us. Love, Patton says, is living under discipline, choosing to act in ways that either promote the good for others or, particularly in this case, choosing to refrain from acting in ways that are unloving, mean, or cruel. the Lenten context for this is very appropriate, because at our best, the disciplines of Lent, those practices we take on and those things we give up, those disciplines are disciplines of love, meant to nurture our love of God.